This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root Arts in Atlanta conversation, and I have the pleasure today of talking with three esteemed professionals from the dance community, T. Lang, Blake Beckham, and John McFall. Welcome. How are y'all doing?
Doing well. Great. Thank you.
Wonderful to be here and talk about dance.
And I am very, very excited to have you all here. So without any further ado, I would love for you all to introduce yourselves, essentially, and talk about where you're from and who you're representing in this conversation for all of our listeners out there. John?
I'm John McFall. I'm the artistic director of Atlanta Ballet, and I've had the pleasure of living here in Atlanta for about 18 or 19 years.
I'm Blake Beckham. I'm a choreographer and the co-artistic director of The Lucky Penny. The Lucky Penny is an organization that creates and presents contemporary performance. It is a production outlet for the work that I create, and also a project called Dance Truck. And we also identify peers working locally and nationally that we want to support, and our presenters as well. So I wear a lot of different hats to do all those jobs in the community.
I'm T. Lang, artistic director of T. Lang Dance. I started the company in New York after grad school. And I've been here in Atlanta for almost 6 years as an assistant professor of dance and director of Spelman Dance Theater at Spelman College.
John, let's talk about maybe some of the changes that you've seen in the dance community since you've been here. Can you talk about maybe one or two of those big changes that you've seen over the past nearly two decades that you've been here?
Well, we were fortunate with our dual mission to open the doors on the Atlanta Ballet Center for Dance Education. And what that enabled us to do was to go out into the greater community, into the neighborhoods. We have 1,350 students now. And what I'm really referring to is the fact that young people here, little kids, can enjoy dance. And if you want to become a professional dancer, you've got a home. Actually many homes right here in Atlanta where you can actually get to the stage and pursue a career in dance. And there's also this richness of all the dance departments in the colleges, like T. Lang being with Spelman. And I think over a generation, the landscape is a very rich and dense one today. 20 years ago, it wasn't like that. And so it's very vibrant. There's a lot of activity. A lot of it's traditional, but most of it is not, which is really fresh. There's young people with, imaginations and ideas, and there's a lot of performance going on in all kinds of places. So there's been a lot happening. And then you have these graduates of dance departments, and you have people coming back to Atlanta as well, who have all kinds of activities that they pursue.
Well, John, you talk about imagination and different places for dance, and I think that's a great segue for Blake. Blake, I know you are with the Lucky Penny, but that's an umbrella for Dance Truck. So I know that things are in transition with you as far as Dance Truck, but could you give some perspective on the idea for Dance Truck and what that started and where you are with that right now?
Yeah, Dance Truck is an amazing example, I think, of the spirit of resilience and resourcefulness that exists in the artistic community at large, but maybe the dance community specifically. Dance Truck was founded in 2009 by Melina Rodriguez and some other friends, Danny Davis and V. Kelly. And they were interested in having dance be a part of La Flash, which later became Flux Night. and they approached the presenters to say we'd love to create an opportunity for there to be dance at this event. And when the presenters felt like there was no adequate space for dance, they said, well, how about a parking spot? Can you give us a parking spot? We'll bring the venue. We'll dance in a truck. And so it was initially founded as a creative solution to a problem, to create an opportunity for that one night. But people were really engaged and excited about the kind of democratic spirit of Dance Truck and making dance accessible in this new way and solving the problem that still exists today of there being a lack of accessible performance venues for choreographers to work in. So that's how Dance Truck started, and we were really excited about the opportunity to engage a new audience for dance and build a kind of loyal following around Dance Truck and include musicians and visual artists and photographers who came into our community and a part of our story. And finally realized with all of that energy and excitement that not all of our ideas fit in trucks, and that Dance Truck could be, just to embrace the pun fully, a meaningful vehicle for advancing some bigger ideas and bigger contributions that we want to make in the community. So we created the Lucky Penny as a more expansive container for our collaborative work, and it allows us the opportunity to contribute in more varied ways to the community aside from just the trucks, which we still love. We love trucks. We still love dancing in trucks.
T. Lang, could you add to that in terms of dance being presented in different venues? I remember going to a show that your dance company put on in the Zuccott Art Gallery last year, and I think that was an example of trying to bring dance to a different space and to a different audience. But even beyond that, can you give some more context and some perspective maybe to what Blake was saying earlier?
That performance that my company did at Zuccott was our fundraiser. And we were strategic with having that fundraiser happen during the artist walk in Castleberry. So we had new members, new possibility of prospective donors and audience members coming in, trying to check out what this movement is happening in Zuccott space. I fully believe, like my peers, that audience engagement, community engagement is key to sustaining our dance, our lifestyle, our craft. Being resourceful and finding spaces like malls or sidewalks or galleries, museums to present your work instead of just the proscenium goes hand in hand with connecting to the audience, to the community, and bringing folks who would never see modern dance or contemporary dance or classical ballet, getting them acquainted and familiar and intrigued about our art form and come to our shows.
Let's talk about some of the funding challenges for the dance community, because I think that dance is not like the movie industry. It's not like the music industry where you can create something once and then find multiple ways to continue to benefit from that. But in each of your roles where you sit, there are interesting funding challenges that are present. John, I know for the Atlanta Ballet, there's a wide range of, I would say, the scale of presentation, from the Nutcracker or Dracula to something that may involve less moving parts, less of a investment in design. Can you talk about even your funding mechanisms to create the works that you all put on at the Atlanta Ballet?
Anything about fundraising always starts with relationships. People who might have an interest or even perhaps be inspired to support whatever that activity might be. And, you have visibility. We each are visible in our own kind of way. I think parts of communities are interested in certain styles or happenings or qualities, whatever it might be. We do at Atlanta Ballet have a wide range of repertoire, but primarily, you know, we just have to connect, and it's, again, about relationships. And the Dance Education Center with all the families, there's an interface there that's wonderful and unique as families kind of grow up with us and they attend performances. Sometimes the students are even on stage with the company, you know, presenting these productions. So it's really, it takes time to cultivate, to nourish, and then you have to, once you establish a relationship, you have to shepherd that. You know, people have interests, but there's so much going on in the world that, and there's so many people with needs. So it's a complex kind of situation. And in the state of Georgia, frankly, you know, we live in a culture where we don't get government support like, you know, European countries or Asian countries, for example. And so we can't depend on anything like that. We do get some local support, but it's modest. It represents maybe 1 or 2% of our entire budget. So it's really about individuals because, frankly, we don't get much corporate support. The opera, the ballet, puppetry arts, which are all institutions that have been longstanding in the community, that do all kinds of activities in the community. We have very little corporate support. The Woodruff Arts Center, which has that kind of visibility with the symphony, the theater, etc., they get, you know, the lion's share of the corporate support. Plus, the world's a different place. It's more global. There's less interest in corporations donating to their local community because they have global activities. So they're always looking at that spectrum across the world. So it's been very challenging, but we do the best we can. And I don't know how else to, you know, really describe it. But again, I circle around to the fact that it's all about relationships. People have to be inspired to give.
I just took a lot of notes on that, John. Thank you. And it's true. It's about cultivating those relationships, those individual donors for concert stage dance, really support and sustain companies. And it's for young, emerging, or mid-career choreographers like myself, it's really important to grasp that understanding and nurture those donors so they continue coming back and spreading the word to help fund your efforts, your works, your productions.
I think maybe, you know, not every member of the general public may have an understanding of just how expensive it is to create dances and deliver them to audiences. Our creative process is labor intensive because the material we use is the human form. Mm-hmm. So it is a very labor-intensive process to create a dance and then work with an incredibly large, diverse, collaborative workforce that has to come together to stage and produce what we do. The ticket prices that the cost of admission never comes close to covering the cost of what it takes to create a work. So we rely upon philanthropy and the nonprofit structure to continue to exist. And for somebody like me, that is one of the greatest challenges that I face every time I set out to create a work, because for me, I don't have a venue. I don't have a staff. I don't have an infrastructure. And I have no idea how I'm going to finance each piece. But I somehow go out and cultivate the support I need to make it happen. And I've been so incredibly moved and inspired by the community that has emerged mm-hmm. and surrounded me to make each piece possible. But it really does take an investment from public dollars, from the private sector, from patrons, from a grassroots community to uplift us. We'll never be able to do it just with ticket sales.
You talked about your process, Blake, and how labor-intensive it actually is. Can you give our listeners some sense of how long it takes to put a piece together from, let's say, idea to performance? What is that process like for you, and how long does that take for someone who is choreographing and creating something largely on their own?
For me personally, it is about a year. I think I would probably even take longer if I had the resources to do so. But I approach every creative process as a rigorous process of research. And so part of the time that I take is being thoughtful and intentional in digging deep, as deep as I can, in a process of research. And I also work very collaboratively in the studio. So it's sort of rare for me to come in to the dance studio with a bunch of set choreography and just teach it to the dancers and ask them to replicate it for me. Instead, we're devising material through lengthy processes of improvisation, and that takes time to let that exploration happen. So for me, an evening-length piece, which would include elements of design, a set design, and time to build it, an original score, and collaboratively created movement, that entire process takes about a year. But for me, I'm also not in a position to get to rehearse on a daily basis. So I'm also collecting this community and piecing it together. And so I think that would change if I was, you know, working in different conditions.
T-Lang, what about you?
My creative process begins with my imagination and being inspired by conversations, which leads me to go deep, like Blake, into my research and investigate topics investigate topics and how I can surround it with other disciplines. For instance, I'm doing a work called Post Up, and it's inspired by Heather Andrea Williams' book, Help to Find My People. And it talks about how the book shares with us these untold truths of our American history, of how folks, after they were freed, after the emancipation, would put postings in the paper to find their loved ones. And this delusional hope or this fantasy, this strong faith to find their mothers or fathers or children held a strong significance for me in my quest, in my seeking for love and identity and community, that sense of belonging. So with that idea, I began doing my research on finding these postings and how it affects me in movement and how I can translate that in movement to my dancers. When I get into the space, I sometimes have ideas of choreography, but I'm inspired by my dancers and their facility that I create specifically on them for the work. In the process, we are talking about the subject matter, the content, and how we can relate it personally to give it this authentic purpose in the work. I'm working with a lot collaborators, composers, and video engineers with this process. And it has taken a good year and a half to get this work in progress up and running for my June premiere at the Goat Farm. It is intense. It is labor intensive on the body and on the spirit and on the pocket. But it is a loving and rewarding process at the end.
John, can you give some context to the Atlanta Ballet's process in a similar fashion, whether it be from bringing to the stage a specific piece or how you manage multiple pieces throughout a season?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying we have 30 dancers at the Atlanta Ballet who actually live in Atlanta. Most people don't realize that. They think that every time they go to see something in a theater that it's some kind of pickup group or they're on tour. So our dancers live in Atlanta. They have families. They have all kinds of roots. And so they're available with us. We contract them for 36 weeks a year. And we try to bring dance from all over the world to Atlanta. Dance that otherwise you would have to either go to London or Moscow or Tel Aviv or wherever. So we invite choreographers, some of the most notable choreographers that are contributing to dance literature today. So they join us in Atlanta in our studios. They create new works with our dancers. Our dancers have become archives and treasures of a multitude of works because we not only do the Nutcracker. A lot of people don't realize we do the Nutcracker. They, again, think it's some kind of pickup company. But we also do four other programs that include a wide range of different narrative ballets or abstract ballets, neoclassical ballets, everything imaginable. And our dancers, fortunately, have the capacity to do all of this, which is pretty unique because if you think Atlanta Ballet is a traditional ballet company, that's not quite what it is. It's not that at all. We do traditional works, but we also present the work of all these other people. The other thing that really is key here is the fact that young people who are growing up are not educated in the arts. They have no interface with the arts. It's another one of our big challenges, not only in Atlanta and in the state of Georgia, but in the general region. And what we're missing here is enriching a child's opportunity to discover themselves from being engaged in the arts. And this, you know, anyway, that's a whole issue. That's worth a whole program or maybe 10 programs. But what we try to do to help as a small arts organization is we bring thousands and thousands of school kids, second, third, fourth, fifth graders, into our theaters. It's the first time they've ever been in a real theater, like the Fox Theater or the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center. Their theater is a mall, or their theater is their computer or their television. It's all electronic most of the time. So it's pretty wonderful to, we literally bring 30, 40,000 kids to the theater every year so that they can at least get a taste of it. And then we also go out into all kinds of different schools like Park Lane. We've been there for 16 years. And we help them, you know, really discover their artistic selves. And they use their imaginations and they create the choreography and they make the costumes and then they perform it for their colleagues. That kind of experience creates enthusiasm to learn because they're then aware that they have the capacity to express themselves. It's a whole lot more interesting than being shackled to a desk and doing a bunch of tests, you know? And it's great to learn. I mean, that's what it's all about. Science and the arts are together, you know? Science and the arts. You know, Einstein was an artist. So was Steve Jobs, you know? And they each, in their own way, changed the world immensely. And so you can tell I'm a big advocate for trying to get a political voice to help bring the arts into schools so that young people can really be engaged and, you know, take off on their own journey.
Let's stay right there, actually, because I think that a lot of us have probably seen some public initiatives to include the arts into more science-based perspectives. You've maybe heard the notion of going from the STEM disciplines to the STEAM disciplines, where it's science, technology, engineering, the arts, and mathematics. T. Lang and Blake, you all both have a connection to the academic setting as well. Could you all give some perspective on maybe the arts in relationship to other disciplines and maybe what you would like to see, or maybe building upon what John just said right there?
I am always inspired by working with students. I've had the opportunity to work with young people at Agnes Scott College, where I currently teach, and also Emory University. And I'm always inspired by youthful energy, and I think it's refreshing to get to work with students and be reminded continuously of, like, the new idea or subverting what you've what you thought. I think students keep me fresh in that way, and I always appreciate that. And I think that artistic inquiry complements other forms of inquiry. It just seems really obvious to me because creative exploration is the way that I it's the manner in which I am curious. It's the way that I discover my world. But I think that we need to keep asserting our voices. And as John was saying, these opportunities are disappearing, especially for younger children that don't have access to cultural experiences and opportunities to build a cultural literacy.
Knowing that the landscape of arts has shifted in this digital age that we're in, Spelman is at the has put a charge to our campus to create interdisciplinarity courses with the arts and sciences and other disciplines, which I think is a brilliant and a excellent choice, a no-brainer, really, when you think about production values and how we bring in technology into dance. We are creating some new exciting curriculum within Spelman that brings our dancers, connecting them to their liberal arts training, their majors in psychology or the sciences, and seeing how, or Spanish or the world languages, and seeing what courses that we can bridge together to inform these other disciplines with the driving vehicle of dance, the arts. It's STEAM is very important for college campuses to highlight the arts and how it enriches the programs, how necessary it is. The arts always identifies and puts their thumbprint on what's happening culturally in our society, what's happening currently right now in the times. And we always look to the arts to showcase that. It's really exciting what's going to happen at Spelman with these interdisciplinarity courses and how the fine arts department is leading that charge.
I think that our listeners can really see that the life of a dancer or choreographer has a lot of different, you all wear several different hats. And I would actually love to dive into that more specifically and talk about the life of a dance artist. What does that look like? Even though there may be things that are specific only to you, talk about what your life looks like as a dance artist.
I'm not a dancer anymore. This is John, and I'd like to just comment a little bit about process. Because in the art of dance, it's all about being there. It's a little village, a little community in a studio or whatever the space happens to be. And the process is critical. For example, I told you we had 1,350 students. We bring kids from all over the greater Metro Atlanta area together. And what are they doing there together? That's how the information is shared. It's from one person to another person, each to the other. And they're available. They're curious. They're open. They learn from each other. They come from different backgrounds. They have different dogmas and theologies. And in the process of getting acquainted and collaborating, not only are they enriched about what they're teaching each other, but they accept it. They embrace it. They celebrate it. It becomes this real, you know, tangible dynamic about how people are working together. And that's what the arts really can do. That's what they do every day. And then these kids will take it to the stage and they'll perform together. But what they're doing in that process is they're learning what inspires them individually and what they want to do with their life and how they can accomplish that, how they can respond to each other and build upon it together. It's kind of like a collective creative force. Does that make sense? That's what's so wonderful about the arts, and that's what's missing in education. But what we do, like if you're going to dance, what's dance? It's more than steps. You know, it's fun to learn steps, and it's fun to teach each other steps. And anywhere you go in the world, everybody's dancing, because just about a year after you're born, you're already moving around and you're dancing up a storm. And you're responding to sound and music and all these wonderful things. And it gets into rituals. It gets into celebrations. Everybody's dancing all the time. But it's really about the spirit. It's really about what really connects us. It's really about people to people. You know, it's really about together. That's where that empowerment occurs, because it is a huge collective collaboration. You have we have an orchestra, you know. We have designers. Everybody does, and they do amazing things. I mean, Lucky Penny's remarkable, you know, with just the landscapes that are invented and then produced and part of the productions. But that's what it's all about. And it resonates in fantastic ways. And somehow we've got to get our leaders in education to understand that the arts are vital to help our children to engage and to dream and to pursue and to enhance their capacity to go get it. Sound like I'm on a soapbox.
I'll just, you know, I wear a lot of different hats, and so every day is like an adventure, and it's always changing, and that's one of the things I love about the life that I get to live. I am an administrator. I am a teacher. I am a creator. I'm a mover. I'm a producer. I'm a curator. I'm a fundraiser. And I move, I hope, fluidly in and out of all of those roles all the time and let one inform the other. And the other really big part of my life that's very meaningful and special to me is experiencing the artwork of our community. So I spend a lot of time every week going to other people's events, going to see performances or gallery openings, and trying to be nourished as an artist by what my community is making. And I really treasure the opportunity to do that, and the bonds and friendships amongst the cultural community that are really important in my life and help me build the relationships that will translate into meaningful collaborations.
I always knew I was a dancer, but I had this bossiness, this bossy character, this character trait that informed me to know that I would become an artistic director, a choreographer, and that also informed me becoming an educator, a dance educator. And I'm thankful that my passion really lined up with my purpose. I too wear many hats, and along with being the dancer, the choreographer, and the educator, becoming a administrator, a CEO, CFO, presenter and curator, and building programs, building programming at Spellman's Dance dance program. It is complicated and complex and enriching and lovely, but it is also draining. But you do it because it's your passion, and you find how you are impacting so many students and dancers in their practice that you know that this is your purpose. You see the results of these lovely artists growing and evolving in their art form and giving back to the community and back to institutions, that you see that all your hats, all the time management, all the stress is worth it.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. Given all of your earlier comments, I would love for you all to ask questions of each other. I feel like since you all are our peers and you may have your own perspectives and your own challenges, I would love to get some good questions and answers from the three of you.
With the landscape of dance shifting and with us tapping into certain content and topics like sexuality, religion, politics, gender, race, what is the next best question, the next impactful question that dance can tackle that has not yet been seen or delved into? What would that be for you all? Sorry.
Well, Deep question.
I would continue to ponder, you know, ways to somehow have a focus that would draw people together. And I think that, you know, in our complex world, and there's so much going on everywhere, and now we're so aware of every nuance of everything that's going on everywhere, and there are so many distractions and all that, and you know, we get so immersed into what we do, it's hard sometimes. You get isolated because it's so intense. And, you know, I think of peace because I think artists tend to be very available and open to, they have a lot of room for other people, you know. We don't have a lot, at least I don't think we have a lot of rules, you know. I mean, there's discipline and there are dance styles. There's the West Coast swing, or you can be a hoofer, or all those kinds of things, or Balinese and all of that. So there are certain syllabus, but those are just frameworks for learning. But, you know, I think we're so open, we don't have that many rules. We don't get distracted with all these dogmatic things, you know. I don't carry a gun because I'm afraid, or that I think I'm right or better than somebody, and my way's the only way to go. I think artists are just so available. And somehow I wish dance could help share that thought. There's something generous about it. There's something compassionate and embracing about it. You know, when we talk about all these issues, why are there all these issues, you know? I mean, this gay marriage thing is unbelievable, you know? It's just bouncing all over the place, and abortion's a big issue, and, you know, we got people saying, well, if I kill you, I'm going to go to heaven or something, you know? It's bizarre to me. It's absolutely bizarre. And because I see the dance community as individuals who, collectively really do want to respond, want to support, want to learn, want to share, want to invent, want to do all kinds of things. And how can we, as dancers and artists and such, help inform others that this is a really kind of wonderful place to be? We all love what we do. That's absolutely clear. I wouldn't do anything else. I've been doing it since I was a kid. I feel really blessed, and I love what I can't wait to get out of bed, you know. And we run into problems all day long, you know, and it's full of meetings. It's full of rules, you know. Okay, foundation, this and that, and then you got to jump through all these hoops. You got to do all this stuff, write all these things, you know. So, yeah. And because you're trying to find resources to help support and, you know, move the whole thing in some kind of place. And so anyway, that's generally, I'm talking too much, but wouldn't it be great if dance could do something like that? Mm-hmm. Get more people dancing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have an answer for the new, like what is the new mm-hmm. question that dance can tackle, but what comes to mind for me is what dance inherently addresses, which I think we have to continue to address. And that is, you know, like this idea that the body is always political. The body is always a political landscape. And we have the privilege and power and opportunity to explore power in the body, to and also explore beauty in the body. Remarkably, even though many artists have challenged our conventions around what a beautiful body is, I think that is still something in our culture that we grapple with and should continue to grapple with. What is a beautiful body? What does that look like? Who does she dance with? Who does he dance with? I think in the we deal in this vocabulary of intimacy, you know, and it's such an opportunity to go into the studio and look somebody in the eyes and hold the weight of their head in your hands. And what are you going to do with that? You have the opportunity to assert power and assert tenderness, and the dynamics of that are so rich. It gives us this amazing platform to explore how we treat one another. And I think these are issues that we need to continue to grapple with and through many lenses and many points of view over and over and over again.
I think that's a really great description, especially given the context of our digital world, where we are very virtual people. In a way, we connect via email, via Skype, via text message, all of these non-intimate ways in many regards. So it's interesting that because dance does still create this moment of interaction between artist and audience, and even artists with each other, in terms of bringing more people to that, what are some steps to bring more people to dance and to be able to experience what you just described, Blake?
Well, I can talk a little bit just about some of the strategies I've used. One being Dance Truck, the idea of bringing dance to the people in this mobile performance venue so that you might encounter contemporary dance in an unexpected setting, and hopefully in that process have the art form maybe a little bit demystified. I think there are still some barriers culturally that we have around the culture of the concert hall and who belongs there, and so Dance Truck has given us the opportunity to create this sort of egalitarian format. And I think that that's been part of cultivating a new audience and helping people feel comfortable and invited into contemporary dance. And then for me, I also am very interested in having a community-oriented, inclusive creative process. So the kind of work that I make right now often incorporates large and complex elements of design, and I look for opportunities to include professional artists, designers, engineers, students, and other members of the general public in creating the work and being inside of it alongside of me, in part because we need that volunteer force, practically speaking, to make the thing, but also because it's how we generate community and how we learn and grow. So opening up my creative process.
I'm really interested in making dances that resonate to my audience, that they can connect, they can understand, they can have a sneak peek of themselves on the dancers that are on stage, finding this interconnectedness. So I always love to fuse not only the classical contemporary forms, but also with social dances, club dances. We also engage our community with talks, post and pre-talks, having fundraisers or events that are inside the community, where we go to the community and we engage with audiences. to have conversations that we can somehow bring back into our research and into our creation. It is challenging to think of your audience all the time and what their needs and wants and desires to bring them into your team, your crew, to support your work. But it's really important to have those collaborators and these other ideas of imagination seeping into your work, where you can also tap into your collaborators' audience to bring in new folk to the seats. We work with a lot of different composers and video engineers and different lighting designers that have a really strong hold in the community, and that has served its purpose with bringing those folks who would never see dance, but they're familiar with DeGratier Daniels, our video engineer, his works, and they'll come to the show. So looking at the ideas like that.
So what's next for each of you? I know you all have varying works in varying levels of at varying levels of completion. So I would love for you all to give our audience a bit of a preview in terms of what you're working on and some upcoming milestones. John?
March 21 at the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center, we'll be presenting programming which includes choreography by Ohad Naharin from Tel Aviv, director of Bathsheva. Alexei Ratamansky, who's probably the most notable classical choreographer living today. He just got the MacArthur Grant, lives in New York City, Russian, born in Moscow, directed Bolshoi Ballet. So we'll be doing a work of his for the first time, and it's really absolutely delicious. One of our own dancers, Tara Lee, is doing a world premiere. In April, we're doing Hamlet. We're bringing it back. It created huge interest, stirred up all kinds of things when we did it about 10 or 11 years ago. Hamlet by Stephen Mills, artistic director of Ballet Austin. And then in May, our resident choreographer, Helen Pickett, is doing a world premiere called The Exiled. We're bringing back a Jorma Elo, who's the Finnish choreographer, his first flash, Music of Sibelius. I'm doing a world premiere to open the program, includes music by Alexander Scriabin and Radiohead, all kinds of things, and which is pretty representative of kind of how we are over at Atlanta Ballet. But I wanted to comment also on one of these issues, and that is visibility. How often are we in front of audiences? I think that's a challenge for dance. Mm-hmm. You got football Sunday, you got this going on, whatever. And they get branded, and they cycle around, and all of this kind of thing. I think one of the keynotes is being in front of people all the time. And we have Wabi Sabi with Atlanta Ballet, and so we're at the Botanical Gardens. We try to get out into the neighborhoods. We're going to go to the Lancaster Festival, a big music festival in Columbus, Ohio. Dancing, startling people by just suddenly dancing around them, and they don't even know something's going to happen, is interesting, because a lot of people don't know anything about dance, and all of a sudden there you are, and you're doing what you're doing, and sometimes it can be very compelling and create a lot of curiosity. So it's probably a confluence of a number of things, but I think one of the keys is being there a lot. We need continuity to help create sustainability and make it. How do you create an appetite, among our community if you're not very present for very frequently? Or where is it? And how many people does it accommodate? There's all those issues. The other thing, too, is it's relevance. People have a general perception oftentimes that dance is not relevant. Why would it interest me? A lot of people have a perception, and they're not even going to go because that's not on my screen. So it's a matter of really, and you can startle people. You get them there, and they go, oh, my gosh, what have I been missing all this time? Mm-hmm. That's another problem. It's another practical challenge. So it's a lot of things like that. But I also wanted to comment on the body because it really got me stimulated. about the body. Is it beautiful? What is it? Well, you know, everybody wears their body. And everybody's different. We're similar, but there are no people. There are no two people the same unless you're a twin or a triplet. Everybody's unique and different. The beauty's really inside the body. It's the feelings. It's your heart. It's your, you know, it's your soul. It's your compassion. It's what's inside. And that's what the arts are about. You know, the arts, frankly, to me, I've never thought about the body at all. Yeah, the body's a tool. It's like piano keys. You got legs and arms and all this guy. It's what you're doing. It's your passion. It's your desire. It's what you're expressing. It's what you're sharing. Yes, it can be physical. It can be exhilarating. It can be sublime. It can be poetic. But it really comes from inside. There's an awful lot of people that can do really wonderful things, jump really high, spin a lot, and they're not interesting. They're not interesting in the context of enrapturing an audience. So there are so many layers to this, and it takes, that's the other challenge about dance. It's not instant. You know, it's not like instant cocoa. You pour the water and then you pour the cocoa in and then you got a drink. Dance isn't that way. It takes a while for an individual to find themselves and then to begin to share that. And that's what dance is about. It's about special stuff.
Up next for the Lucky Penny, we're going to be focusing a lot of our programming in the summer months, and we look forward to bringing in some special guests in the month of June, Melissa Crodman and Kelly Bond, who are going to perform a work called Colony. And after that, I will be premiering my next evening-length piece, which I'm creating in collaboration with my team, led by Melina Rodriguez. That work is called Dearly Departures, and it will premiere at Dramatech Theater on the campus of Georgia Tech July 24th and run for 2 weekends.
Well, right now I am working on my evening-length work, Post Up, that will premiere at the Goat Farm in June. June 6th through the 8th, 2014, in collaboration with my composer, who I met at the American Dance Festival, John Osborne, as well as my other collaborator, DeGratier Daniels, who will be doing a video interactive component for the work Post-Up. Following that premiere, I head to teach back at the American Dance Festival, ADF, at Duke University. And then when we get back from the fall, I'm excited that my company will participate in the production of Doxology, conceived by Paul Carter Harrison, choreographed by the Diane McIntyre, produced by the National Black Arts Festival and Kennedy Center.
As we wrap up, any final thoughts before we close? T. Lang, Blake, John, any last words?
You know, I'm very thankful that you saw the need to bring in the dancing voice, the dancer voice, to your programming. This helps our charge of finding that visibility, finding those new audiences to get them intrigued to see and know more about what dance is and what is happening in Atlanta. Atlanta is a hotbed of entertainment and this hotbed of art, the art scene that's happening here, as well as dance, is a strong contender. So I thank you for giving us that voice, giving us agency to share our work.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll dovetail on that. And in addition to thanking you, Floyd, I just want to recognize Wonder Root for their continuing commitment to including dance mm-hmm. in the community that you guys are shaping. You know, I remember in 2011, Wonder Root presented this concert, Magnetic Drift, over in the Magnetic Theater in Reynoldstown, and it was a showcase concert for a group of six or seven of us, independent choreographers. And that moment was really special to me because it was one of the first times that a non-dance organization really put resources aside and identified this need and said, we'll present you, we'll help you. And to me, that was a little spark that was really meaningful. And I'm encouraged to see that there's a presence for dance continuing through Dance Chance Atlanta and conversations like this.
Boy, thank you also. And there does seem to be a greater undercurrent of connectivity where there's a deeper, wider wellspring of activity and support for, this wealth of additional interest, but also all the individuals like T. Lang and Kate who are really the game changers, the young people who are, bringing things to the surface. And that speaks well for the greater community, the greater arts community in general. I want to thank you also for helping all of us pause long enough just to get a little better acquainted. Of course, we know who each other is, but I welcome also, I'm really inspired to be an advocate, to be there to support and help the whole thing continue to rise. It's very exciting.
Well, John McFall, Blake Beckham, and T. Lang, I thank you all for your words of wisdom and your time. I really appreciated it, this conversation.
Thank you. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com.